Welcome, sir. Do you have any questions before we start?
No, I'm good to go, man. You just do your thing, and I'll answer the questions, and hopefully we'll have a good conversation here.
All right, sounds like a plan. Let's do this thing. Welcome back to another episode of Beyond the Check Service Industry Podcast, where we talk about all things service industry related and whatever else I feel like talking about. If you haven't yet, please go watch my television series, Beyond the Check Worker Owner Edition, where I hang out with fantastic chef owners, find out about their lives, the history of the restaurant, and of course, they cook up and let me try some of the best dishes they have to offer. My guest today is a fantastic gentleman. He's a weight loss coach and an emotional eating expert. He's lost 100 pounds himself, and now he's on a mission to help others lose weight for good. His company is Freedom Nutrition Coaching. Ladies and gentlemen, John McLernan.
How are you doing, man? You know, I felt just a little bit of envy listening to your description of getting to go to these restaurants and having chefs prepare you amazing dishes that you get to get to evaluate. I think, man, that's close to a dream job, I'd say.
I mean, you make your own path in life, man.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
I just called them and they were like, okay, cool, come on.
that's a good way of making that work. Hey,
so I show
you make
up.
Me good food, I'll say nice things about you.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fair trade.
That's it. So.
Yeah. Where are you right now? You look like you're under the sea.
Yes, my backdrop makes it look like I'm in a submarine, but actually I live in a city called Red Deer, which is in Alberta, Canada. So I'm about 6 hours north of the border from Montana for any American listeners.
Oh, this is chilly. And chilly up there.
It is. So in Celsius right now, it's say minus 17. So I think that's somewhere like, might be around, I don't know, it could be like something like maybe 10 degrees Fahrenheit.
10 degrees. Like cool. Yeah. Cool. Super cool.
Yeah. Literally.
Nice.
Yeah. We've got the Rocky Mountains about an hour and a half west of us. And so we're kind of just on, we call it the foothills. And yeah, it's a really beautiful part of the world. You know, if you see tourist brochures of Canada, you're going to see photos from like the glacier lakes in the Rocky Mountains that are kind of in our backyard. So
very nice. And yeah, you can. You ski a lot?
I don't actually. No? I probably should. You know, I mean, I did when I was younger. It makes me sound like I'm old. I just ticked over 40, but I did when I was younger. But
yeah, babies.
I found it to be kind of an. I've got kids and it's an expensive hobby. So
touche.
Travel is really like the thing that we love to do. My wife and I love to do the most. I'm a huge fan of like ethnic cuisine and experiencing different things around the world and. Really, travel allowed us to indulge a lot of that, as well as experience a bunch of different cultures. So, I would opt for travel over skiing because I think the way that my brain works, I get more and more lit up by going into a different culture, listening to a different language, eating food that I wouldn't routinely eat, and just being immersed in that kind of experience.
And you're less likely to break your leg.
That is true. Yeah, I did hit a tree once when I was skiing. I was relatively new to skiing. I would have been about, I don't know, 15, 16 years old or something like that. And I wore glasses at the time too, which is, you know, so I'm skiing downhill, got my glasses on, kind of lost a little bit of control and went and actually crashed into a tree, just like those cartoon, you know.
Yeah.
It looked just like a cartoon. Just
arms spread around it, legs around it.
Yep.
And then fall skis flat. Pointed up in the air.
Yeah. And then my glasses got knocked off. And of course the snow was like a couple feet deep. But I'm blind as a bat with my glasses. So I'm like stunned because I hit a tree. Glasses are knocked off. And I'm like, I don't even know if I'm going to find these things. How the heck am I going to get back down the hill when I'm trying to like, you know,
And that was so the maybe, last maybe time you went skiing.
Close to it, actually. I'm like, maybe that's the whole reason. We did some backcountry snowboarding as young people as well, which where I lived, we had some hills and stuff that we could kind of hike up with our snowboards and just snowboard down the hills. But yeah, actually, you know what? It was when I left my hometown and moved to a city where there weren't really any mountains near me. I think that's when I kind of got away from it and I got the travel bug instead.
There you go. So you've been all over. You were lost your bio. Tell me about yourself.
I mean, I've had quite the backstory just in terms of, you know, I was a nanotechnology researcher at a university. I then became a marine engineer in the Navy. And I spent 6 years doing that. I did 2 3-year stints with a 1 year break in between where I went and lived in Australia.
Oh, nice.
My wife is an Aussie. And then we packed up our lives and hopped on a plane to Mexico, started living down there. And that kicked off but ended up being like a 3-year kind of globetrotting adventure. And we didn't leave with the idea that we're going to go for 3 years. We just kind of left without a plan. We're like, yeah, let's just kind of see what happens, you know, because most people, you know, they save up money, they buy a house, they just kind of get into this, and we're like, well, we could buy a house or we could travel the world. Let's travel the world. And you know what? In hindsight, that was the best decision we could have ever made. So
you can always buy a house later. Maybe you have by now.
I haven't actually.
Oh, good for you.
I think the way that, I don't know. There's pros and cons. You know, if something breaks in my place, I just call the landlord and he fixes it. I'm not tied to a mortgage. I think that was like the thing for us, is because my wife and I are quite nomadic. Obviously, COVID put a bit of a damper on that and having a kid. But I think the idea of being tied to something, I mean, I know you can sell a house, but it was just this idea of being tied to a huge, monstrous chunk of debt. I mean, and yes, again, we could argue that it becomes an asset in, you know, once it's paid off, but and so maybe we actually will look at buying a house in the next couple of years.
So it's a like, double-edged sword. We bought a house last year.
Yeah.
I guess it's been about a year and a half now. And yeah, we fixed the air conditioning already. We had to redo the entire HVAC system, actually, because the furnace went out. And so to replace the furnace, because it was so old, and you had to replace the air conditioner too. We've had the pipes drilled out because they were clogged and just like flaking on the inside. I mean, just the microwave died. I shit you not, 3 weeks ago, and it took 2 weeks to get a microwave because of supply chain issues. So you don't know what life's like without a microwave until you don't have one.
Just
try to warm up like your coffee, right? You're like, I don't want to cook with a microwave, really, but it is damn nice to have.
it's awfully convenient. I like the idea of outsourcing my cooking to appliances that I don't have to monitor. So, you know, I have like a rice cooker, an instant pot, an air fryer, slow cooker.
Yep.
You know, that's kind of my style nowadays, is like, I'm just going to put it in there and kind of set it and forget it.
Right. Are you the cook in the house? Do you do all the cooking?
I do quite a bit more of it. My wife does more of the baby food prep. And so, because we're trying to keep our kid eating healthy food as much as possible. He's just ticked over one. And so, you know, being a nutritionist, I'm like, oh man, I don't want to give this kid like goldfish crackers. Like that's just a bad idea for his developing brain, you know, and probably I'll be less protective if we have another kid. But first time around, I'm like, no, I know I work in the field of behavioral psychology as well as nutrition. And so I'm like, I know what this does to developing brains and I don't want him having it. So,
all right, no McDonald's till you're after 12.
Yeah, basically. My wife and I got Big Macs last night. We haven't had a Big Mac for...
Oh, how'd you feel?
More than 10 years. I think more just disappointment. Because it was just like fluffy bun. Where's the burger patty in there, man?
No, like, it's terrible. It's like the size of a half dollar. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had a coupon, like, you know, so they were $3 each. So we're like, okay, but I'd never pay full price for a Big Mac because you're paying for a bunch of bun and lettuce with a couple of little.
There's a trick to that too. If you can just order the McDouble and you add lettuce and mac sauce.
Yeah.
And it costs, what, $1.50 or something? Maybe it's $2 now. I don't know. But
a little higher in cash.
But otherwise, if you buy the Big Mac by itself, it's like $4.50.
Yeah.
So that middle bun costs $2.50.
Yeah, that was kind of how I felt about it. So what I actually used to do is actually order a grilled chicken patty to go with my McDouble and jam that in there instead of bun.
this is coming from the nutritional specialist, people.
Yeah, get an extra 27 grams of protein out of my burger, right? And then I ask for a glass of water, and then I go and get soda water instead. So instead of drinking pop, I would drink, if I want something fizzy and bubbly, I'll drink like soda water. I kind of acquired a taste for that when I was living over in Europe. We lived in Italy, Poland, UK, and Turkey. And so,
jeez, you have been all over.
Yeah. So those countries, they drink carbonated water a lot more than we do over here. I mean, it's becoming more of a thing with like St. Croix and Boobly or Bubbly or whatever you call that stuff.
Those are the nasty ones. You know what the best, I don't know if you have Kroger in Canada. Do you have Kroger?
We don't.
No? Bummer. Kroger brand seltzer water is the best soda water that I can find. And okay. I've tried every single one of them.
I'm writing that one down. I do. Is it not Schweppes? Canada. Well, okay. It's in Canada.
Schweppes. The ginger ale company.
Yeah, they do a soda water that I that I really like the cheap, because I look at the potassium content because I'm a nutritionist, and the good stuff has a higher potassium content. And potassium is actually, it's a really important mineral for us. Potassium helps us put sodium into our cells. Not that anybody ever cared about that before, but now you know.
Good to know.
And we tend to be deficient in potassium. Like, you know, cooked spinach and cooked tomatoes are good sources of it, if anybody cares, now that we're talking about potassium.
I do care. I want to know more about the potassium. Tell me all about the potassium, John.
Well, so that's what got me into drinking the soda water, is because it has, say, 75 milligrams of potassium per serving versus maybe 10 milligrams in the cheap stuff, because it costs a little bit. You know, that's, you get a little bit of different flavor because of this as well. But when you go from raw spinach to cooked spinach, you increase the bioavailability of the potassium in there. And so you get 10 times more out of cooked spinach. Because I used to track for a period of time, I tracked my nutrition using an app called Chronometer. It's like a little apple with a target on it, an arrow going into it, and it's red in color. But what it does, it gives you like a full breakdown of all the micronutrients, all your vitamins and minerals, not just protein, carbs, fat, and calories.
That's in your body.
In the food that you eat. So then I started trying to engineer my diet in a way that I would hit all the targets on like these different minerals, like potassium and chromium and selenium and stuff like that. So now I eat like 5 Brazil nuts a day, for example, because I'm like, oh, that's where I got my selenium from, you know? And
what is selenium doing for us?
You know, I actually haven't memorized the function of selenium. I just know it's an important, it's a trace mineral, essentially. In other words, we don't need a lot of it. Right. And that's the fun, that like minerals are double-edged sword. Like iron is the one that we think about most commonly. And I'm a little bit low on iron right now, just my blood work done, because I'm a frequent blood donor. I donate 6 times a year. And so, it's actually, in one sense, minus the iron deficiency that can come from it, donating blood can be quite healthy because it stimulates the production of new red blood cells. So I'm like, cool, I'm going to offload the old stuff and get my body to make some new stuff and save some lives and eat some cookies.
Right. The Red Cross needs to push that a little harder.
Oh, man. Like,
the health benefits of giving blood, right?
Yeah.
You're not just saving other lives, you're saving
your
own.
The one thing I think is, I think in the US, though, you have like clinics where you get paid to donate, whereas ours is voluntary. And there is a bit of a downside to that, because what you'll get is sort of the more vulnerable elements of your population going routinely to do this more often than they should, and like faking things. And the clinics don't really care because they're getting their product. And it's, you know, I'm like, what are they doing with this blood plasma? Well, we're getting into it like.
Yeah, because it's the plasma that you get paid for. I don't think anybody pays you for your actual blood donations.
But yeah, the plasma is going to like rich people, you know. And so they're making a lot of money off of this plasma. You know, kind of, so I don't know. I have like mixed feelings about that, but when it comes to being a blood donor, I'm like, I'm okay with that. So, my goal is to hit 200 donations in the course of my lifetime. And I've hit 28, I think, so far. So
you got plenty of time.
Yeah. I can only do 6 a year. So it's a goal that's going to take me until I'm probably, I think, 68 years old. So another 28 years of working on this one.
Good luck, sir.
Yeah.
You got this. Is 6 times like the most that they'll allow you to give blood
for males? Yes. For females, you can only do it 4 times in a year, because of course, they have blood loss with their monthly cycle. And so, they're only allowed to donate 4 times a year. Whereas males are allowed to donate 6 times a year.
Good to know. You can save up to 6 lives a year.
Yeah.
Gentlemen.
And as a side note, I forgot, with potassium, potatoes are another great source of potassium.
Really?
I did not know that. Gets a bum rap.
You think just the banana when you think potassium, right? You think just the little.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, they're not even the best sources out there. That's the irony of it.
Is it in the potato skin, or is it in the whole, all of the potato?
It's throughout the flesh of the potato as well. You know, the humble potato, gets a bum rap because of like hash browns, french fries, potato chips, all these kinds of stuff, right? So we've taken actually a really nutrient rich tuber and converted it into a highly processed, nutrient-empty product at the end of the day.
Now it's just carbs and salt.
Carbs, salt, fat, flavors. I mean, look, I like potato chips taste good. I'm not dumb. Like, I was in food chemistry as well. Like, they engineer them to taste really good, but they're nutrient-empty. But I think the other night I boiled up a big pot of potatoes, and you know, boiled potatoes have the highest satiety index of any food. In other words, when you eat boiled potatoes, you will feel more full and physically satisfied than eating any other food.
That's why we love potatoes on our plates. My wife, potatoes, whatever, potatoes, yeah. Potatoes, potatoes, mashed potatoes, baked potato, whatever, potato, yeah. French fries out the ass.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's comforting. You feel when you eat mashed potatoes. Yeah. It's not just because grandma always made them. It's because it actually is super comforting.
Yeah. Well, you said French fries up the ass, and that just reminded me of it's one of these wacky news stories of like some guy who was like putting French fries up his butthole and hanging out in public and letting seagulls like pick the French fries out of his butthole. This is happening in the UK somewhere.
Of course.
Of course. So I believe he ended up getting arrested.
I hope he was at least doing it for a TikTok, you know, like fun.
I don't know if TikTok existed at the time because this happened, I think, in about 2014. But you know how like these crazy stories like stick in your head. So, it's funny how you're just rattling something off and you go French fries out the ass, and I'm like, man, there was a
that
guy
was an actual
doing
thing.
That.
There was a guy who did that.
Don't do this, people.
I wonder how the seagulls felt about it. Like, I know. Hey, there's a guy down here. He's got French fries. There's a caveat though. We got to pick him out of his ass.
Yeah, like I'd be worried, like, man, like, because seagulls can be like pretty vicious too, and it's impressive. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever seen like a seagull swallow an apple. Like, they have a throat like a snake. They just open up and like dislocate their jaw. And there was a video actually of a seagull swallowing a baby rabbit, the whole complete, like not chewing, just swallowing the whole dang thing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, these are monsters, these creatures. So you think, if you're a dude hanging your butt out to get like, you know, French fries picked out of this,
that's a dangerous activity.
He's going to come along. He's going to grab your twig and berries and try and swallow that, man. Like,
keep it tucked well if you're going to attempt this trick at home, kids.
Yeah, do not do this in public. If you're going to, I don't care what you do at home. That's your own home. It's your prerogative. But don't do this in public.
I mean, I don't care how much you love seagulls,
or French fries,
or French fries. It's just I feel like it's just disrespectful to the French fry.
Yes, the humble French fry. Well, okay, so did you know the first French fries weren't actually cooked in France?
Do elaborate.
They were cooked in Greece.
Cha-cha.
Okay, I'm
I should have saw that one coming.
It's like, that was a setup from a mile away.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, now that I've got a kid, I'm like, yes, I can actually tell dad jokes because I'm officially a dad.
And it's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I was trying to think, like, what is my favorite dad joke? Well, there was one. It was like, I bought some shoes off a drug dealer. I don't know what he laced them with, but I've been tripping all day.
That's more of an adult dad joke, but I dig it.
True, true. Maybe a kid one is like, oh, well, no, this is probably not one. Sort of. What did the grape say when the elephant sat on it? Nothing. He just let out a little whine. Yeah, I know, right? It's like, it's awful.
I tried to help out with the little whine there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, one time my wife is into, she's a performer, so she's into like improv theater. She's done street theater, you know, kind of like Shakespearean stuff as well, but like improv comedy. And so they had an open mic night one time, and I just did like a dad joke battle with like another one of their comedians, and it was epic.
That sounds epic.
Yeah. So I've kept a whole collection of them in my phone because you just never know when you need to kind of like spice up a boring night with a series of dad jokes that gets everybody groaning. But the best, like the best dad jokes are the ones you kind of have to think about for a sec.
And you're like, that's a joke.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's like the difference between like American and British humor. Like American humor is like punch you in the balls. Like you just can't miss it. Right. Whereas British humor is like, we sneak in the back door, and mm-hmm. if you're switched on, you'll pick up on it. If you're not, you'll be like, huh?
Dry
yeah,
humor.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think subtle humor.
I think I detected a hint of British accent there. Subtle humor.
Subtle humor. I can do more British accents. All right. I believe this is my London one.
Yeah. You know what? I think you're on par there. I don't do accents that great. Like my wife, you know, as I said, she's an Aussie, and she just makes fun of me when I try to do accents. Like, oh, good day, mate. How are you?
I'm a little jealous that you have an Australian wife. My Siri I set to Australian because it just makes my phone feel sexier. I feel like.
Well, I set Google Maps to, I think, Nigerian English. Because they have a really, like, I lived in South Africa for a period of time as well. And there's lots of Nigerians in South Africa. And so I do like I do like languages, and I really, the cool thing about the English language is there's so many different, like, could you imagine somebody from India speaking to somebody from Scotland with like somebody from speaking to somebody from China? You hear three like radically different versions of English, and yet somehow we can sort of figure this out.
Right?
It's actually really, really incredible. But I just, there's something about the Nigerian one is kind of fun because it's like big and broad and warm. And so,
can you do it?
You know, it's just, I don't even want to try, but I love it. Right. It's just, it's a fun one.
But it's an option. It's an option. You can set it.
Yeah. Yeah. it throws me off a little bit though. Cause of course they have different terminology, like slightly different terminology as well. Right. So
it'll adjust for the terminology too.
Right. Yeah. So we might, I don't know, what do we say? Like an off ramp, and they might say an exit. Like that's a really basic example, but they have like an interchange instead of an overpass or things like that.
So. Oh, snancy.
Yeah. So they use, yeah. Yeah. So.
Nice. So were you traveling around the world like on your own, or did you do a lot of that while you were in the military?
Actually, didn't do very much in the military. I was in the Navy. And but the time that the stretch that I was in the Navy was about the 6 years leading up to the 2010 Olympics in Vancouver, the Winter Olympics. Oh. And so much of our work, it's crazy how much goes into this behind the scenes. People don't realize this. We think like we just, I don't know, the Olympics just show up and we party for a couple of weeks. And then, you know, it's like, no, like,
no, you got to build a city first.
Right. 10 years of planning goes into this stuff to be able to host an event like that. So we spent so much time doing drills with like the U.S. Navy up and down the coast of like North America. Like being prepared for the possibility of some kind of like terrorist attack
on the Olympics,
and you know, right. And we spent a lot of time actually really boring, like driving back and forth like a tractor, mapping out the seafloor. So we have this like underwater sonar stuff that we just go along and it maps out the ocean floor, so you can look for it. So see, mines are really, really intelligent nowadays. We think of like, you know, Minesweeper and this old thing, you know, you drive your boat over, your ship over it, and it goes boom kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They're super intelligent nowadays, and they're really low cost. Like it's a lot cheaper to use a mine to take out an aircraft carrier than it is to use a missile. Yeah. So, which is why minesweeping is still a thing, but they can have intelligent mines that will, that you program them and they'll like dive and they'll hang out on the ocean floor. And they might even like, they're not like this round, clearly obvious, discernible shape either, but then you can program it to come up to a certain depth and then get triggered by a certain thing. You can teach them to count ships. Like it's really, right.
I mean,
we never think about this stuff. Cause we don't, like, when was the last time a Navy ship was sunk? I don't know. The USS Cole was hit by something back in early 2000s, if I have that right, or maybe it was the late 90s, I forget.
There was an accident, right?
Right, yeah, yeah. So so we haven't done a lot in terms of actual naval battles, like legit naval battles, since probably I don't know, World War II.
Yeah, a long time.
But technology continues to develop, and really,
but we keep building all this stuff. We still keep building more of it for some reason.
Because you just never know. Well, the Navy allows you to move like your military, your Air Force around, right?
Right.
So like an aircraft carrier is the ultimate projection of power. It's like you if you got more aircraft carriers, you win the swinging dick contest basically. So like, cuz what is the military?
Now we do, I mean, but now we just have, you know, I don't even know why any human being even needs to go into war as far as the US is concerned, right? Like,
yeah.
We have we literally have the robots. We literally have all the drones. Like,
yeah.
I don't.
Well, I mean, there's probably an argument to be made that war is a waste of time. What did I hear? It's like, yeah, young men fighting for, you know, giving their lives for old men. For what? Like, that's...
For oil, usually. But
right. yeah, that's what's happening. And it's ironic. Like, it's so crazy. Like, in Canada, we have among the top, I think only Saudi Arabia has more actual proven oil reserves than we do. But because of environmental regulations, we've like kneecapped our oil and gas production industry, despite the fact that in Canada we produce the most ethical oil in the world, the most environmentally responsible ethical oil. And so when you kneecap us in the you know, for like virtue signaling greenery, sort of greenwashing, what ends up happening is you end up buying oil from Saudi Arabia, Russia, and Venezuela, which are these brutal dictatorships.
Right.
I'm like, so you think that, hey, yeah, we're so virtuous because we kneecapped oil drilling and oil production, all that
we just buy it from the bad guys.
Right. We haven't changed our consumption patterns. Now, consumption patterns are going to change with the spike in oil prices, which I think is not entirely accidental either. You know,
I have a Tesla.
Oh, there you go.
it's been a godsend recently. Just like, I just drive past the gas prices and I'm just like, meh.
Yeah.
Thank God I don't have to stop and get that stuff.
But what's interesting, someone made a remark. Well, there's a couple of things about this that are interesting. If you replaced every car, every gasoline-powered car with a Tesla, the U.S. power grid could not produce enough electricity to fuel them.
No, not right now.
No. But then, of course, you could look at, you know, batteries. How green are batteries?
They're not. Man.
Yeah. So it's this funny thing. Like,
but it's an evolution, semantics. Right? So it is all working towards a thing, you know?
Like, yeah. I'd love to have a Tesla. I think they look cool. I love the idea, like just smooth, quiet sound and acceleration. Oh,
it's so smooth and quiet, yeah.
The
inside's like being in a Holiday Inn in the 80s.
Oh, man, that's
it's
brilliant.
It's just like nothing there. It's just beige.
You know, that part of it, I think is really cool. I'm not knocking electric cars, but I'm looking at the practical reality of it, right? The idea being that, you know, we're fighting wars over oil when we have plenty of oil in North America, for example, right? Because
even the U.S. produces like almost equal to, if not more.
Yeah.
Then there's no reason for us to even import, really.
So the real issue here, because I think what it boils down to is, you know, it's funny. I think, was it Michael Moore? I don't know. He's probably still around.
He's around.
Okay. Well, you know, I think he made some documentary around greenwashing, which is where I think I learned the term, where it's like the whole green industry is not nearly as green as we think. The real issue here, like the only thing that's going to potentially improve the environment is changing our consumption patterns. And the moral of the story was, we can't save the planet with green energy. The only way we can do it is by consuming less. But we have an entire, now I sound like, I don't know if I sound really Canadian, but it's like we have an entire like capitalist society built on like endless consumption, which is really destroying the planet. And I'm not even like an environmentalist.
It's across the board, even like all the way down to clothing, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, clothing is disposable now. Like everything is disposable. Like you don't fix a fucking DVD player. You get a new DVD player, right?
Right.
If you're even watching DVDs, who the hell still has DVDs?
Well, now here's from a health standpoint, here's where things get a little bit interesting. I'm not sure what it's going to look like, because you look at hyper-processed foods through like monocropping agriculture are cheaper to produce at scale. So rather than, you know, some nice sprouted grain artisan bread, which might cost $8 a loaf now with, you know, the price of gas and shipping things around and so on, you know, you can still mass produce white bread for $2 a loaf, which is more expensive than a dollar a loaf. That's, you know, 100% increase in price. But so we're now making like healthy food less accessible to our population, meaning we're dry, you know. So while reducing consumption is generally a positive thing, it's going to push people towards consuming more crap and watching their health get even worse. So we're
truth.
we're preach, John. Spot, man. Yeah, well, I just feel like we're like, you know, someone asked me like where I sort of align politically, and I'm like, gosh, I don't know, man. Like I want the systems and the efficiencies of the right. I want the goals of the left, you know, but I want the freedoms of the libertarians. So what does that make me? I don't know.
Like, logical. I like to try to be just logical when it comes to politics. Like, I don't care. Right. Let's just do the logical thing and don't get pulled in one direction or the other very far. Right.
Yeah.
And just use your brain. People have a very difficult time. The United States has a very difficult time with just applying basic fucking logic.
Yes. But, you know, so of course this dives into like one of my real areas of interest in the work that I do, like with around emotional eating and relationship with food and weight loss and things like that. But the core of it, like I work in what I call brain-driven weight loss. So because I say the brain is the driver of behavior. But so a lot of us don't understand how our brains actually work. We kind of have three brains tucked into one. You know, we have like a what's known as like the reptile brain, which is really, really primal. It's like a simple analog circuit. That's obviously, again, a simplification. Then you have like the midbrain, which is like the mammal or the animal emotional kind of brain. And then you have the top one, which is the neocortex. And that's the human brain, so to speak. That's the one that we use for logic and calculations and conscious processing. Most things running through our brain, like 95% of brain activity, is unconscious. We're not aware that it's happening. And that's a good thing, because if we were conscious of like breath and heart pumping and, you know, spleen filtering things and like liver, like we couldn't function. So we kind of need to do that. But what it means is our brains can be hijacked as well. And that sounds like maybe a little bit of alarmist rhetoric, but it's kind of true. So I'll give you an example. What do you think is the number one selling candy bar in the world?
I mean, I would probably have to guess just the Hershey bar.
Actually, it's the Snickers.
But I was gonna say Snickers first. But then my logical brain was like, well, probably Snickers, but Hershey is probably around the world.
Yeah, maybe Snickers buys chocolate from Hershey for all we know to like coat their candy bars.
I think they do.
But Snickers is a Nestle product. But so Snickers had this wildly successful marketing campaign that catapulted them into the number one place. And it was four words. So this is why I want to illustrate like how your brain is being hijacked and you don't even realize it. It was hungry, grab a Snickers. And I wonder how much they paid somebody to come up with that slogan to figure out how this hijacks your brain. Snickers pulled a trick. They convinced us that it's not a candy bar, it's a meal replacement.
Because it has peanuts in it.
Right. Right. And so but you think hungry is the question they ask. Well, we mistake a whole lot of internal feelings and emotions, any kind of discomfort for I'm hungry. But it's actually, you know, any kind of, so food is a type of emotional anesthetic, comfort food, emotional eating, right?
And your brain will do that even when you're thirsty too. You think you're hungry, but yeah, you really just need to drink some water.
Yeah. So you got that. That's one word. Grab, that suggests act impulsively without conscious thought, right?
Okay. Grab.
Right. And then a Snickers. So now we connect uncomfortable feeling, act impulsively with a Snickers. That's the message. And then what happens when you do that and you eat a Snickers, it lights up your brain with dopamine, completing sort of the addiction loop.
And then you walk into a gas station.
I want a Snickers.
And you grab a Snickers.
And then, and of course, they did clever things like you're not yourself when you're hangry, all that kind of stuff. They had the funny Mr. T commercials Nuts. Yeah.
Where everything was just off until they ate the Snickers and then everything was fine, right? Yeah.
Right. So, like, that's what we're up against. I mean, logically, you
remember,
you know,
V8 did the same thing, except V8 was actually good for you.
Right. Yeah. Is V8 still a thing? I'd probably drink it nowadays. Yeah, because
I'm pretty sure it is.
to go back to potassium, on airplanes, I drink tomato juice because that helps with the swelling in your legs.
But V8's fallen far, too, because you have all kinds of different V8 juices, right? Oh, okay. So you get all the fruit juiced ones, right? I'm sure. I don't think they probably have corn syrup now, but they might.
They right? Could.
But like V8 should not have corn syrup in it. So if somebody look it up, if it does, don't drink V8. But I would think that V8 probably went through a cycle where they had corn syrup and now they've taken it back out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's corn syrup.
Something interesting. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. When we fly, because we're at lower pressure, our taste buds are desensitized by about 35%. And so if you look at the consumption pattern for tomato juice, what you'll see is that at sea level, it's, you know, let's just say maybe 10% of the population drinks it. On airplanes, you find 35 to 38% of the population drinks it. And you go,
with vodka?
Whoa. Yeah, maybe. So, because I think it was, maybe it was Lufthansa, one of these German airlines, were going to remove tomato juice from their offerings. And the outcry was like so over the top that they were like, oh my gosh, people really drink, like they really like this stuff, you know, because you get apple juice, orange juice, tomato juice.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always ask for tomato juice when I'm flying. And we've done a lot of flights around the world because of the whole potassium and so, you know, ushering sodium into cells and sort of preventing some of the swelling that takes place when you fly. So.
Huh. I wonder if it's true for mountainous regions too, right?
Man, that'd be interesting.
People in Colorado just, you know, really down,
sipping on
really,
tomato
really
juice.
Down with the tomato juice.
Yeah. Well, I think they're what, maybe 5,000 feet versus 30,000 feet. So
yeah, quite a difference.
Atmospheric pressure and oxygen levels. So yeah, but now I want to hop on a plane again.
I haven't been on a plane in a long time.
Yeah, my last flight was 2019, I think.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, it was going back to Australia for my father-in-law's 70th birthday.
I think I flew to Mexico in 2018.
Yeah.
And that was the last time I was on a plane. We did drive the Tesla all the way to Texas.
That's pretty cool. So how, well, of course, charging takes a little bit of time, but I guess
you can kind of
either like have a nap or entertain yourself or something like that. Like,
yeah, you can watch Netflix and just chill. Yeah.
You just kind of like build it into your plans. Like, we're just going to have a Netflix break every 2 hours or something.
Yep, every 2 hours. Well, we have a short range. So we drove a short range halfway across America.
Okay.
Yeah. But a drive that would normally take, I think my crew got home because they didn't follow us home. They followed us out there. And they made it home in 14 hours.
Yeah.
We made it in 26.
But you watched a lot of Netflix, so he covered some different ground in a different way.
There was, it's just not quite a long enough time to take a nap, right?
Right. So I think, because that would be the perfect opportunity, like, okay, we're going to drive across the country, and we're going to start watching, like, Breaking Bad, you know?
Right.
Or I think Yellowstone is the big one now. I don't watch a lot of Netflix, mostly because I just think if I'm watching Netflix, like, I could be, like, playing with my kid or interacting with my wife or something like that, you know?
Yeah. See, that we don't have kids, so we have dogs. Okay. And so me and my wife watch a lot of Netflix.
Fair enough. I mean, I've seen plenty of Netflix in my day. It's not that I'm
I don't want to just boost Netflix. HBO, yeah, watch a lot of you. Hulu, we are on you all the time.
Yeah.
Prime Video. Yeah. Hang out with you too.
We had a bit of Disney Plus for a little
bit. We have Disney Plus. Yeah. We just got Peacock too because we wanted to watch the new Fresh Prince. So.
Oh, what? There's a new Fresh Prince out.
It's called Bel Air, and it's on Peacock.
Now I wonder, man, because Fresh Prince was classic back in the day.
It's a gritty version.
Here's a little story about how does that go? Yeah, I forget. You know, how he
theme did song?
It. Yeah, I'm like, but I'm hearing it in my head. Like I can hear the rhythm and the rap, but I can't.
Got
think
one
of the
little
lyrics.
Fight. My mom got scared. Yeah. You move me with your auntie and uncle in Bel Air. So it's a gritty version. It's like the Dark Knight version of
Fresh Prince. Okay. Oh, interesting. Now the Dark Knight was good too. I gotta say, like that was.
It was. It was good. The second one was good too, and the third one just really was like because it started off so realistic, you know.
Right.
We're like, oh, all of this really could happen, and by the time you got to the third one, it was like, okay, you can't really make those things.
Right, yeah, but I guess it's like where do you go from there, you know, at a certain point, right? So but like everyone will talk about like forevermore Heath Ledger's performance as the Joker. That was
iconic, epic.
Yeah. And I haven't actually watched the Joker in its entirety with Joaquin Phoenix, but
that's all right.
I would like I've heard that one was like a really interesting one, as really interesting take on him as well. So because like the Joker is such an iconic character, because
he's equal to Batman, right? Like when you think of Batman, the other thing you think of immediately is obviously the Joker.
Well, it's this idea that like you need me and I need you, you know. And I love like the Joker's like I guess he's probably an anarchist because, you know, burning stacks of money and whatnot. He's like, I don't do this for the money, like. But maybe also like it's
the Joker's like a honey badger. You just don't give a fuck.
Yeah. That's about it, right? And so it's but I think there's a little bit of that in all of us, you know, like push us far enough. And maybe that's what, you know, because I try to see it like, is this a commentary as well, like a social commentary that like there's this element, you know, push us far enough into a certain situation, and this is what we might descend into.
Yep. It's scary state of society.
Yeah.
I think it was like that. I mean, that's Gotham was always in and of itself like the metaphor for just a very, I mean, wealth and disparity, right? Like,
right,
wealth and disparity. That was what Gotham basically stood for, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. It kind of feels like we're moving that direction again. You know, you look over the last couple of years and the distribution of wealth and how it's shifted. And this is something that I wrestle with a little bit. You know, I have three podcasts, and one of them is called It's Not So Black and White. And the idea behind that is we're having like nuanced discussions around this stuff. Cause I think we've kind of lost the ability to, you know, you're mentioning we kind of lost the ability to think critically and to like evaluate information. And so I try to listen to information from sources all across the spectrum, which would make some people angry because it's like, no, you need to be in my echo chamber only listening to what I listen to. No, I'm going to listen to what they say and what they say over there and so on. And then I'm going to try and filter it through like my worldview and go, okay, because everyone has a spin and everyone has an agenda, but there's usually a thread of truth in what they say.
Right. It's like religion.
So it's like, can you weave enough together to figure out what the actual truth of the situation is? Because it's never, there's always more than meets the eye.
Yep. The middle ground logic. But but to get to the logic, you need all the information. Right.
So. Right. And so I wanted to start a podcast where we could talk about, you know, difficult issues and have a little bit of discourse and disagreement where we go, it's like, by the way, at the end of this, we can still be friends. You know, right? I think cancel culture is interesting because I feel like it's going to eat itself at some point because
the cancelers get canceled.
Right. You don't. So let's say you cancel somebody. Well, they don't disappear. They just go to like the other side with all the other canceled people. And if you keep canceling people, eventually the other side has all the people. And what are you left with? Oh, we're the ones all by ourselves over here. You know, it's such an interesting phenomenon, really.
The world is a crazy, crazy place. If I wanted to do a thing called Breaking Bread, where I would have basically a cooking show, so like a potluck, and so people from the opposite perspectives would come and make their dish, right? And then we would sit down and break the bread, quote unquote, around the table while we discussed very uncomfortable issues that were of opposing viewpoints, right?
Why are you not doing this? This sounds incredible.
I just haven't got to it yet.
Fair enough. fair enough. But I'm like, dang, this is like what I'm doing and taking it to another level. So, for example, here's kind of a, I don't know if it's a crazy idea, but I, you know, my co-host Lamar is black and he's from New York. And so it's obviously a bit of a play. Like, and he and I, we got talking about this, like back during BLM and stuff like that. Cause I'm from small town Canada. I'm a white guy from small town Canada. Right. Like, that's a whole nother world that I've never, like, now I've traveled around the world and I've lived in different cultures. I've been a minority. I was nearly murdered. Like, I've been the victim of racism and race related violence and so on, living in other cultures. So I kind of have at least enough experience in these sorts of things to be able to say, okay, I can put myself in your shoes because I have an experience that, you know, but I didn't live my entire life like this. You know, that's the difference. But I thought, you know, it'd be really crazy to try and find an articulate white supremacist, for example. And what I want to figure out is, how did you get there?
Right.
And that's because I think if we just say we're going to cut your tongue out, it's a quote from like Game of Thrones.
We don't learn anything from that.
Right. So you go, you know, how did you, because I don't like, maybe I'm, call me naively optimistic, but I don't think people are born like racists.
No, it's definitely learned.
Right. We're born with, obviously we can filter out, like, you know, when I'm walking around in like a Southeast Asian country, it's pretty obvious that like, I'm probably not from this part of the world, you know, and people might give me some funny looks. And it's funny because they can be way more direct. Right? They just like openly stare at you in almost an uncomfortable way. But you kind of just learn to roll with it when you travel.
But, right, like you go to Mexico and all of a sudden you're just gringo to everybody. Like,
yeah.
Gringo.
Well, it was funny because we lived in Guadalajara for about 6 months and, you know, what else, like when they stopped seeing us as like a source of tourists, it's because kind of the local shops got to know us. Like we walked everywhere. We walked between like where we lived and because we just lived in an old beat up hacienda paying like $180 a month for rent kind of thing. Like it was, we were not living in the lap of luxury. We were living with locals in a hacienda and going to like the local cafes and things like that. And when they stopped seeing us as a source of tourist dollars, what we found is they're actually incredibly hospitable, warm, welcoming. They loved that we were trying to learn the language and, you know, and so on. Like it was a really enjoyable experience. The downside, of course, is the level of violence that just takes place down there. You know, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
And we stick out. Like, hey, man, doesn't matter how good I speak Spanish.
You're a target.
I'm white.
You're gringo.
Yeah. And I don't tan. It's like funny. I say I come in two colors, white and red. So I'm clearly Canadian, right? That's all.
But which actually, also a fantastic bubbly soda water.
Okay.
Clearly Canadian.
Well, you know what? I haven't really drank that one all that much. I probably should.
It's sweet. It's weirdly sweet, but it's so good. It's super expensive. It's like $3 for like one tiny little bottle.
Okay. So they're the high end stuff.
Yeah, it's the high end seltzer.
It's a status symbol for seltzer water.
And hailing from the great nation of Canada, sir. So
Yeah. Well, my wife and I went to a paint store recently. And we pulled up. We started pulling out the palette cards and tried to figure out what our skin tone actually was. I'm not white.
Based on the paint scale,
I'm ice wine.
You're ice wine.
Yeah.
Snazzy, sir.
Yeah. Well, the other option was crepe paper pink, and I was like, I am not going with that one. I am ice wine.
Crepe paper pink.
Yeah. It's like, nope. I am ice wine. That's my skin tone. And my wife was something like a light mocha. So because she has slightly darker skin than I do. I mean, she grew up in Australia and whatnot. So she can get a little bit of a tan. I can't. I'm like, it's a hopeless venture for me.
I'm going to go to Home Depot now and start just checking the old skin tone.
Oh man. Yeah.
I'm curious. And I got to go look at how much potassium is in my Kroger brand soda water.
You know what? That's a great, to me, that's like the mark of like a good soda water versus a low end one is you look at how many milligrams of potassium are in there. And they might give it like per serving, but yeah, you look at, okay. Cause you'll find the generic brand in Canada. We have one called President's Choice, and it's just like this generic brand across like all these grocery chains. And you'll find like 10, like I said, 10 milligrams of potassium in a serving. But you go to the Canada Dry and you get 75. So you look at like, yeah, how much you're getting per serving. And that's, what, you know, when you get something good.
Touche. Okay. So quick, important question.
Yeah.
And I mean that. How do we keep from getting our brains tricked by the advertising and the world at large?
The short answer is awareness. So once you become informed to like how the game works, it's a lot, you don't get quite as tricked. But here's the kicker. So we live, I think, in a pretty potentially emotionally distressing world, because we have 24/7 access to information, and the purveyors of information, the media, whether social media, digital media, legacy media, whatever, they make money off our eyeballs being on their product. What attracts our brain is negative. Our brain is hardwired to hunt for negative because it's a primal defense mechanism. We look for threats. We don't focus on the good. So they know from a profit-based perspective that they have to constantly show us negative happenings in the world to keep our eyeballs. So you kind of got to know that this is how our brain works. Now, what that does, though, is it makes us more emotionally distressed about the state of the world. I'm not suggesting we're living in some paradise here, but it's probably better than it was 1,000 years ago.
Oh, let's for just say sure. That. Yeah.
Even with everything happening today.
Yep.
So you have to actively like look for good in life and practice something like gratitude, which will then bring down your body's levels of stress, which gives you more headspace to operate in this world with mindfulness. And mindfulness is kind of this cliched word that gets thrown around. I actually just finished a meditation teacher certification, and I really liked this. So meditation is really a focus on our internal environment. We're starting to learn more about that. Mindfulness is an awareness of our external environment. So what's happening around us? So that's kind of the distinction that I like to make. And so really practicing the skill of mindfulness. So I will still read an emotive headline, you know, some inflammatory rhetoric, and I will feel myself get triggered. Mm-hmm. But then my brain goes, click, hey, I know what just happened there. Like you can't always perfectly avoid getting triggered. But if you know how the game works, you go, okay.
You can be self-aware of the trigger.
Right. Then you go, let me take a step back. Why is this triggering me? What is this challenging? Because usually if we're triggered, we feel like this is a threat to my sense of identity. This is a threat to kind of like who I am as a person.
Or to my worldview.
Yeah. This is why like facts don't really change minds for people, right? This is why politicians lie. Because it's like we will buy what we want to hear versus the truth.
Which is completely illogical.
Of course it is. But here's the fallacy. Human beings are not logical.
Unfortunately, that seems to be true.
We have a logical element to our brain, the prefrontal cortex. But it's I love this analogy. It's not my own. Can't remember who first coined it, but it's essentially the logical brain is a rider and your emotional brain is an elephant. When everything's calm, you can steer the elephant. As soon as things get triggered, you can't steer a big 10,000-pound beast as like a 200-pound human. It's not happening. But that's how our brains are wired. Now, that's not a bad thing necessarily, because if you think from a survival perspective, you're faced with an immediate threat. You don't have time to be like, let me check the wind there. And sort of, it's like you have to act without conscious thought. So we're wired this way for the purpose of survival. However, we don't live in a world where, you know, for most people in the first world, we don't live in a world where our immediate survival is threatened on a daily basis. And so we're kind of living in the 21st century digital world. We're living in this world where our human brain isn't really wired for this. So I think in a very large coconut-sized nutshell, what I'm trying to say is awareness and mindfulness are really the steps to, so even just practicing that and treating mindfulness as a skill, not just something you kind of do, but you have to consciously practice something to get good at it. So I'm like, go read headlines from the opposite side of the spectrum that you agree with that piss you off and see if you can learn to calm yourself after being pissed off by what they write and cultivate the skill, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is learned. You know, when you're younger and stuff used to piss you off, right? Or like,
right, yeah.
And just get mad at and you just stub your toe and get angry, right? Like, and you're just like in this bad, and everything's just going wrong. And it's going wrong because your mind is allowing it to go wrong, right?
Yeah.
But when you realize, if you stop and you're like, oh, you know, I hurt my toe, but that's not going to last all day. It's going to be better in a second. And you walk it off.
Well, pain's even an interesting one, because the old theory of pain was that pain was directly correlated to tissue damage. In other words, you know, you stub your toe, you're in pain because you've damaged that little portion of tissue on your toe. But it's actually not necessarily true. Pain is like a learned... So I started diving into this because I have this hip issue that I've not been able to figure out. Like, I've had my hip scanned, I've had it x-rayed, I've had it worked on by, you know, osteopaths, chiropractors, physiotherapists, massage therapists, like, and we can't seem to find an answer. Why does my hip just keep, like, basically misbehaving, giving me all this pain randomly when we can't find a bit of tissue damage?
A reason for it to hurt.
Yeah.
I have two hip replacements.
FYI. Okay. Yeah. So I thought, am I getting osteoarthritis? Is that happening? Do I have like torn or strained muscle or something? No. But in my history, I have two motorcycle accidents. So both times landing on my left hip, but they were 16, 17 years ago. So you would think like this shouldn't be an issue. It wasn't an issue for many years. So why did this suddenly reemerge? And so now I'm actually starting to look into a modality known as somatic experiencing. And it's starting to look at the connection between like the nervous system, past trauma, like, because motorcycle accidents are like physical trauma, as well as some emotional trauma to it as well. But so past trauma and sort of what gets imprinted on your nervous system and sort of the patterns it develops and what might, like, so there's, I think why I'm sharing
this. So you think it's just mental?
I don't know if we could distill it down to if it's just in my head necessarily, but there's something there that we can't quite pin down. And so that's what I'm trying to explore now, is to say, like, I can't find a specific physical reason why this should be happening, but there's pain there. And so that's why I say so I started learning more about chronic pain and trying to figure out, okay, like, because there are people who live with chronic pain who can manage it every day because, again, it's not directly correlated to tissue damage.
Yeah, you just live with it.
Yeah, so we can learn. So anyways, it's been this interesting sort of rabbit hole I'm going down, and it's crazy how we just keep discovering things about the human body where it's like, who would have thought? Because I was certain there must be like a pulled muscle, a torn muscle, or something like that. You know, all that we can really find is, okay, there are some like scar tissue and adhesions, as they call it, like where your muscle fibers are kind of clumped together that are maybe restricting its motion. But the other part of it is, I heard this phrase and it was, your body will sacrifice a muscle to protect an organ. It's like, huh, that's really interesting. So right in around your pelvis, inside that sort of pelvic bowl or whatever you'd call it, pelvic mm-hmm. cavity, mm-hmm. Is like your small intestine and sort of the lower parts of your large intestine, and obviously where you have bowel movements and whatnot.
And because of the accident where your body thinks that it needs to protect that area on that side.
Particular area, it's more vulnerable. Yeah. So we haven't, like I said, we haven't necessarily got the answers, but I would... And so now, you know, I've started reading Bess van der Kolk's The Body Keeps the Score, which is quite a heavy read, but it's a very interesting book. I mean, because I've been through trauma as well. So there's trauma and PTSD, and it's like, it's a heavy read. Like, don't read it if you're really, really, you know, if you're already suffering. Like, I'm not sure if you want to read it because my wife, she's got a vivid imagination. So I'm like, don't read this, because when you start, you know, you start, it's just heavy reading. Maybe a little bit lighter would be Gabor Mate's When the Body Says No. That's like another one. But this whole just trying to understand like what is, you know, what's really going on in the body.
That's crazy. I didn't know I didn't know what was wrong with mine for years because I just never went to the doctor.
right.
I just thought like I can't stretch. I'm not flexible. Like and my hips do this weird thing where like they just like it'll just bite sometimes and like, God, what the fuck was that? And it just just walk it off and go away. And for years and years and years until like I just started getting worse. And finally I'd gone to like I went to an osteopath or an internal doctor. And they sent me to go to physical therapy, to which I couldn't do because I actually had hip dysplasia of massive proportions, which had completely ground out all the cartilage in my hips. Oh. So it was just bone on bone for years and years of just pain. And just, I was in pain all the time. But like, there's nothing you can do about it. So you just get used to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just how your life is. I couldn't put my own socks on. My wife had to clip my toenails.
Yeah. It's funny because I'm like, I'm getting to the place where I can still clip my toenails, but it's getting difficult to put a sock on my left foot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like a part of me is stubborn and refuses to, but it's only one side of my body. I'm like, I can easily tickle the bottom of my other foot, you know, with both hands, no problem. So it's why is it this one side of my body? Because one of my co-hosts on one of my other shows, we have another show called Wellness Unfiltered, and it's more of a panel discussion of everything that's wrong with how we approach health and their medical for profit and, you know, complex in the US. But she had to have like hip surgery because she had like some sort of hypermobility where she could like deep squat, like right down to like, you know,
put her butt on the floor, right?
Yeah. But then for 3 days she couldn't move, you know, so she had this mobility that she shouldn't have had. So this sort of hyper hip mobility kind of thing. And so she had to have some kind of surgery to correct that. So it's crazy to think of like someone, she's
the opposite.
Yeah. Like 42 or 43 and having like hip surgery to fix that. So anyways, it's
yeah. 42 with, I'll be 43 in a month.
Yeah.
But yeah, double hip surgery. And yeah. But yeah. Cause nobody thought that that would be the problem. I'm too young to like,
right. Yeah.
No. They were shot.
No kidding. So what was the recovery like for that?
Right now on the right one, I'm on week 6 and I go back to work and do whatever I want. I can't lift anything heavy. I can't lift like super heavy things right now. Cause it takes 3 months for your bone and the implant to actually completely solidify
fuse?
Together.
Right. Okay.
And then about 2 years for it to all just like kind of,
Yeah. But then you're gonna have like a bionic hip for the rest of your life, kind of thing. Like,
yeah, hopefully it'll last at least 25 years, if not longer. And hopefully in 25 years they'll have a simple solution to replacing a little rubber piece that fakes the cartilage. But
right, yeah. Well, because like my mom, she had like stem cell injections, and but it sounds like there's a bit of a party happening back there.
Yeah, the dogs have lost their minds.
Yeah, she had stem cell injections that kind of like delayed sort of the deterioration of like bone and cartilage. Now my mom's like 73, but
yeah, that's a totally new thing they can do now. If you can grow the cartilage back with the stem cell injections. It's not covered by insurance in America.
No, it wasn't here either. Like it was a fairly expensive treatment. But
yeah, because it's brand new.
But it didn't necessarily restore her hip mobility to what it once was. It just kind of stopped the degeneration in its tracks, I guess I would say.
And probably the pain went away a little.
A little bit, yeah. But then I think, man, it's really interesting because she had that hip pain for so long that it's imprinted in her brain. So even though,
I still walk with a limp and I don't need to, right? And I'll catch myself doing it. And I'm like, you don't need to do that. I'm just so used to it. Or like getting in and out of the car, like just doing the move that I used to do. And I'm like, I don't have to do that. I can just get in the car.
It's funny because it's patterned, right? So it's like, I would say, like, see if you could find somebody who does something like somatic experiencing. And like, because I don't know a lot about it, so I don't feel like I'm really super qualified to talk about it. It's not voodoo magic. It's observing kind of like the nervous system and how it ties into like what our body's experiencing.
That's super interesting though. You want to get some shout outs?
Okay, yeah. We didn't actually get to talk a lot about emotional eating, but man, this is a fun conversation. We covered it.
We can do it again sometime.
Yeah.
Happy to come hang out with you on your podcast. Hit me up.
Yeah, you know, we should jump on It's Not So Black and White at some point. Because I love this concept of yours, this breaking bread one.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Man, I'm like, dang, that'd be so awesome. Like, really, because that's why my show, I have this show, It's Not So Black and White, is this idea of like, we're hoping, like I said, the goal is to get Andrew Yang on there. We'll see if we can. Because I think he's a really interesting cat. I may not entirely agree with some of his what would I say, like policy prescriptions in terms of how to solve the problems we're facing, but like he's young, he's smart, he's business savvy.
He's different, like, he's trying, you know.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so we got
he's
that.
He's the I've Apple got, of politicians.
Hey, there you go. I like that. Yeah. Except he's not white. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and I think that's in Canada, it's less of a hiccup, right? But I'm genuinely curious if that's an actual impediment to him being successful because he's Taiwanese American, you know?
I mean, I think he could probably do really well.
Well, that's the part that, and maybe, you know what, maybe he just needs to, you know, maybe the next run he gets more exposure in the next.
I mean,
run
I don't know how much like actual like Asian like racism we have in America. I don't know. Like, is yeah. I'm sure it's a thing. People suck, but
yeah.
I don't see it. Yeah, so I don't know.
Well, yeah, that's the funny thing is like traveling opens your mind hugely, right? Because you figure out that actually a lot of us really just kind of want the same thing. You know, I want a family, I want to be loved, I want to make a living, I want to be able to eat, I want to have social connection. Like, that's what we want, man. Like, this whole idea of like, you know, like I said, war is like, you know, young men fighting old men's battles. Like, and for what? You know, so.
For the military industrial complex to keep making money.
Duh. Yeah, it's your number one export, of course. Duh. So yeah, it's not so black and white. That's a great podcast.
Those the tankers and the freighters aren't going to build themselves.
That's right. That's right. You know,
and if we build them, we're going to need to like have a reason for it. So we better
make
sure there's a little war going on somewhere.
Yeah. So I feel bad for the folks in Yemen. I mean, almost 400,000 casualties and nobody talks about it. And the Saudis bomb the crap out of them, but the U.S. sells weapons to the Saudis, so we don't talk about it.
I've never understood our love for Saudi Arabia. Like, they are literally awful, awful humanitarian people, right?
Marriage of convenience.
And yet we let them get away with whatever they want. And women can't even drive. They're not even people over there. And we let these people, we just do business with these people. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you're mad at Iran. What the hell is Iran even doing?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not great on the humanitarian front either, but.
No, they're not. But you've got Iran, Syria, Russia, that sort of alliance or that sort of triad, I guess, if you will. And so Saudi Arabia gets us, you know, some airbase and airspace over there. And I don't know. And they buy a lot of stuff. So it's like if
they
your
spend
number one
a lot
customer,
of money.
So I think that's what it boils down to, tragically.
Yep.
And I wish I had some solutions, but you know what? Maybe if you started breaking bread,
we'll figure it out.
We can figure it out. Yeah. So if anyone does want to know about like my nutrition coaching, you can go to freedomnutritioncoach.com, learn a bit about that. Yeah. And then if you just look up like Coach John podcasts, that's on Twitter, on Twitch. YouTube, where else? Anyway,
it's all in the
three podcasts.
It's all in the descriptions, people.
There you go. And you know, if someone out there listening is like, hey man, I'd like to have a conversation with this guy, I'm like, cool, reach out. Let's have a chat. My podcast, your podcast, wherever, you know, I love talking, clearly.
Yeah, and you're a great guest. I'm sure your podcast is going to be amazing, and particularly when I'm on it. And
yeah.
And super insightful. This is really fun, dude. We got to hang out again. Everybody, you get John on your podcast because he's just a fun guy to hang out with.
Yeah, man, it's been a pleasure. So, yeah, we'll do this again sometime.
Hell yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, make sure I say your last name right. John McLernan, though that doesn't really matter because he's Coach John everywhere.
Yep.
Go listen to his podcast and go watch my television show. Rock and roll.
Do it.
Cheers, everyone. Awesome, dude. Yeah, for real. Send me your calendar link and I will,
yeah.
We'll hang out and talk politics.
Yeah, I love that. And I don't want to spoil anything. Let's just unlock this. So I got myself, I got Lamar, and then sometimes Chris and Kyle. So Chris, she's a female trainer who's done really well in like a male dominated misogynistic industry, and she trains people at the Olympic level.
Nice.
It's pretty cool. And then Kyle is, see, like I don't do Republican Democrat sort of thing because I don't even understand. U.S. politics is a bit of a
You don't beast. Have that there, right? That's like no. It's not even a thing.
No, but he's a former.
You have a parliament.
Yeah, we have a Senate, and then we have like our members of parliament. So the members of parliament are supposed to represent the common people, and the Senate is your sober second oversight or whatever. And then you have your prime minister who. Yeah, he's questionable currently, but you know,
loved him for so long.
Yeah, but it turns out he's committed five illegal ethical violations in this office, and we've never had a single sitting prime minister do one. Like, there's been some questions around previous prime ministers, but he's like
the only one
he's
that
actually
got busted.
Legally... Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
he's been prime minister for a long time too. What is Canada's
20? I want to say 2015. So yeah, 7 years.
7 years. That's it. Trudeau's only been there for 7 years.
Yeah, pretty sure. Yeah, 2015. Then we had another one in 2019 or something like that. Yeah, it was sunny ways, my friends. And then let's print money, everybody. Shovel it out of the back of the truck and cut backroom deals with engineering firms in you know, my riding. We call it a riding. I don't know if you call it that down there, but that's like where he gets his seat. And he fired our first Indigenous female minister of justice, which was like one of the highest ranking positions in government. So you got a female Indigenous woman. And he fired her because she called out his corruption publicly. She was like, you can't do this. This is illegal. So he fired her.
You know what? It makes me feel good to know that Canada is also corrupt. I was always just a little bit jealous of, like, it just seems so clean and responsible and truthful.
yeah.
But well, no.
Look, by and large, we like really hold these values. Like, you look at the recent protests we had, and that was probably the largest protest we've ever had in our history in terms of people assembled. And for all that the media tried to sort of denigrate it, I was like, these guys were like shoveling the sidewalks, cleaning up garbage, feeding the homeless. Like, it got a little violent at the end because the police were going in there and beating them down. But it was the largest peaceful protest we've ever had. And it's like, I was like, well, I mean, I don't agree with everything they're standing for, but a healthy democracy should be able to tolerate peaceful protest. Mm-hmm. So that's the part that I was like, you know.
I mean, you want free speech. The price you pay is that you have to hear speech you don't like.
Yep, that's pretty much it. So, well, I'll tell you what, man. It's been a real pleasure. I'll send you the link for It's Not So Black and White. We'll bring you on, and you can dive into. We'll just let the conversation roll. You know, kind of like this one here. You'll get to meet.
That's what I do.
Either Kyle and Chris, and we'll just go from there, man.
Awesome, sir. Sounds great, dude. Rock and roll. I fist right. bump you, but there we go. Oh.
Virtual fist bump.
Virtual all right, fist
take
bump.
Care, man.
Later, man. Have a great day. Take care of those fish.
Will do. See ya.
Later.